Hello, this is Miss Still with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Monday, February 9th, 2026. We have a lot of news to get to today. First, on the front page, Illinois adopts pediatric vaccine plan. Springfield. Illinois will adopt the childhood vaccine schedule recently released by the American Academy of Pediatrics in a rejection of federal recommendations. The move is the latest example of Illinois breaking with the federal government over health care policies and guidance since President Donald Trump took office. The Trump administration has spent the last year revamping health care policies, such as by recommending fewer vaccines for children and pulling out of the World Health Organization. While Donald Trump and Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. undermine science, spread dangerous vaccine misinformation, and put countless lives at risk, my administration is forging a different path. One that puts our people first, Governor J.B. Pritzker said in a news release Thursday. With key insights from the Illinois Immunization Advisory Committee, we are endorsing clear evidence-based immunization schedules to help keep Illinois families safe as the federal government chooses conspiracy theories over American lives. The American Academy of Pediatrics vaccine schedule is the same as what Illinois already recommends. Last year, Illinois adopted an older federal childhood vaccination schedule from before the Trump administration began making changes. But Illinois Department of Public Health Director Dr. Samer Vohra said Wednesday during a meeting of the state's Immunization Advisory Committee that because it's a new year and the federal government keeps making changes, it was important to revisit the recommendations to clear up any confusion over where Illinois stands. The American Academy of Pediatrics childhood vaccine schedule differs from the new federal recommendations in a number of ways, largely sticking to previous guidelines. The Academy, for example, continues to recommend routine flu vaccinations, broad vaccination to protect against meningococcal disease, hepatitis B vaccinations for all infants, and COVID-19 vaccines for all children from the ages of 6 to 23 months, whereas the new federal schedule does not, instead leaving it up to parents and doctors whether to vaccinate individual children in most cases. The American Academy of Pediatrics released its schedule last month after the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention dramatically reduced the number of vaccines it recommends for children. A dozen prominent medical groups, including Chicago-based American Medical Association, have thrown their support behind the Academy's schedule. The Academy had criticized new federal recommendations as a departure from long-standing medical evidence. Meanwhile, federal officials said the new CDC schedule came after a review of other countries' vaccine practices and the scientific evidence behind them conducted at the instruction of Trump. The updated CDC childhood schedule continues to protect children against serious diseases while aligning U.S. guidance with international norms. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services said in a statement Thursday, many peer nations achieve high vaccination rates without mandates but relying on trust, education, and strong doctor-patient relationships. And HHS will work with states and clinicians to ensure families have clear, accurate information to make their own informed decisions. The statement also said Democratic-led states that imposed unscientific school closures, toddler mask mandates, and vaccine passports during the COVID era are the ones who destroyed public trust in public health and should not be guiding policy. Illinois' decision to adopt the Academy's vaccine schedule came a day after the Illinois Immunization Advisory Committee met to discuss the dueling vaccine schedules. The committee voted to recommend the state adopt the Academy vaccine schedule after many committee members expressed dismay at the new federal schedule. "The new federal schedule is very stripped down," said the committee chair, Dr. Marielle Frischoni, with Rush University System for Health during the meeting Wednesday. She said the new federal schedule is lacking in many areas, such as by leaving out a number of high-risk groups that should be getting vaccines to protect against meningococcal disease and illness caused by bacteria that can infect the brain lining, spinal cord, and bloodstream. The new federal guidelines no longer recommend broad vaccination to protect against meningococcal disease, instead recommending it only for kids in certain high-risk groups and saying it should be up to parents and doctors whether to vaccinate individual children who are not at high risk. "This goes against all standards of care. It goes against our oaths as physicians. It goes against epidemiology, and it goes against science," Frischoni said of the missing high-risk groups. Dr. Archana Chatterjee, a committee member, recounted a story at the meeting about how her daughter caught rotavirus as an infant and had to be hospitalized. "The illness can cause diarrhea and vomiting, especially in young children. The Academy schedule continues to recommend rotavirus vaccines for all infants, whereas the federal schedule says it should be left up to parents and doctors whether to give the shots to babies." Chatterjee said her daughter is now grown and doing great, but she said she told the story to emphasize the importance of the vaccine. "These are real things that actually impact families," said Chatterjee, who is dean of the Chicago Medical School at Rosalind Franklin University of Medicine and Science. "This impacts everyone, and it is not just the deaths that we need to focus on." Illinois' decision to adopt the Academy vaccine schedule is one of a series of recent moves by the state that parts ways with federal public health policy. Earlier this week, Illinois announced that it was joining a network of the World Health Organization in hopes of a better positioning the state to respond to emerging health threats after the federal government withdrew from the organization. Illinois also broke with federal vaccine recommendations last year, deciding to continue to recommend hepatitis B vaccines for nearly all newborns and to continue to recommend COVID-19 vaccines for children ages 6 to 23 months. Pritzker signed a bill into law last year formally establishing a process for the state to issue its own vaccine guidelines. After Kennedy, a longtime vaccine skeptic, fired and replaced all of the members of the Federal Vaccine Advisory Committee. State-regulated insurance plans are required to cover vaccinations recommended by the state, and at this point, all the vaccines recommended by the state continue to be covered by private insurance plans, Medicaid, and Vaccines for Children program, according to the state health department. Our next article, Pritzker issues bleak budget report. Uncertainty looms as feds enact or threaten funding cuts. Springfield. With Governor J.B. Pritzker's annual budget address less than 2 weeks away, a new report from his office is setting the table for a speech that is likely to be a bleak tone. And it's likely to serve as a warning to lawmakers and advocates that the state doesn't have room for new spending programs in the upcoming 2027 fiscal year. The report's message, enacted or threatened federal funding cuts, are creating tremendous uncertainty even in the current fiscal year. Unlike the federal government, all states, including Illinois, are required to annually balance their budgets and have limited, if any, options to fill gaps left by these federal reductions, the report from the Governor's Office of Management and Budget stated. The Governor's Office also puts direct dollar amounts on some of the impending federal policy changes or cuts. $100 million over 2 years to implement administrative changes related to the new Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program and Medicaid requirements. $80 million annually as a result of the federal government shifting a greater share of SNAP administrative costs. $705 million in new benefits spending on SNAP if Illinois exceeds newly created error rate caps. $6.1 billion in cumulative lost revenue for Medicaid, $3.8 billion of which is lost federal support by fiscal year 2033, due to caps on provider taxes. Impacts would be first felt in fiscal year 2028 and would ramp up over the following years. $1 billion in child care-related funding in fiscal year 2027, if the courts allow the administration's funding freeze to take effect. A judge on Friday issued a preliminary injunction blocking the freeze from taking immediate effect. The culprit for the known variables is largely H.R. 1, widely publicized as the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. In October, the governor's office warned it could erase $830 million in tax revenue for the current fiscal year. But state lawmakers acted to decouple the federal and state tax code in certain areas to their fall veto session. And the report now expects that to reduce the current year impact to about $587 million. Pritzker, who directed state agencies to hold back $482 million in current year spending last month. The impact of the tax code changes would be less in the upcoming fiscal year because the largest current year impact was due to acceleration of certain tax benefits forward, according to the report. But as of Friday morning, when the report was published, there was also a major unknown variable. The Trump administration has threatened to freeze $1 billion in child care-related funding to Illinois and another $9 billion to several other blue states. Ostensibly, the administration said it was seeking to root out fraud without making specific allegations, although the affected states argued the amount of paperwork required for the child care funds to be released presented them with an intentionally impossible task. A federal judge on Friday issued a preliminary injunction blocking the freeze from taking effect as the full case plays out. Previously, the courts had issued 2 2-week restraining orders, creating an added level of the uncertainty in the run-up to the budget address that Pritzker is slated to deliver on February 18th. Existing budget shortfalls. The report notably didn't touch on fiscal pressures related to structural shortfalls in ongoing revenue compared to expenditures in Illinois' budget. GOMB's October report pegged the FY27 deficit at $2.2 billion if lawmakers didn't make any changes to spending or taxing policies, noting much of the deficit was driven by the state's own policies but exacerbated by federal changes. The baseline projections show revenue is not expected to grow in FY27 without lawmakers finding a way to increase it. At the same time, spending was on track to increase by about $1.9 billion from the current fiscal year without changes. Federal funding allotments are already showing signs of falling short in FY26, according to the January report from the General Assembly's Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability. Federal payments to Illinois were down $169 million last month compared to January 2025, a decline of nearly 36%. While COGFA's experts caution that federal receipts are typically one of the state's most volatile revenue sources because they arrive on an inconsistent schedule, January marked the third straight month of decline. Federal receipts are now down $202 million, or 8%, so far this fiscal year. The FY 2026 budget assumed a notable rise in federal sources this fiscal year, so significant improvement is needed over the remaining 5 months to reach initial budget expectations for this category of revenues, the report said. Despite indications the federal government is sending less money to the state, other sources such as income and sales taxes continue to increase, and revenue is up 3.5% so far in FY26. Our next article, Trump's vision for DC Arch clashes with history. Washington. President Donald Trump says history is on his side. He wants to build a towering arch near the Lincoln Memorial and says that the nation's capital first clamored for such a monument 2 centuries ago, even going so far as to erect 4 eagle statues as part of the project before being derailed by the attack on Fort Sumter. It was interrupted by a thing called the Civil War, and so it never got built, Trump said aboard Air Force One as he flew to Florida last weekend. Then they almost built something in 1902, but it never happened. Trump's history is off. The eagles he references are actually part of a bridge connecting Virginia to Washington that was built decades after the Civil War. The closest Washington came to an arch was a wood and plaster construction built in 1919 to mark the end of World War I, and even that was always meant to be temporary. For 200 years, they've wanted to build an arch, Trump said, meaning an arch. They have 57 cities throughout the world that have them. We're the only major city, Washington, D.C., that doesn't. Chandra Manning, a history professor at Georgetown University, said Washington was fledgling in the 19th century, dealing with a housing shortage, a lack of boarding houses for visitors, roads that went nowhere, and an incomplete U.S. Capitol. Washington, coming into the Civil War, was still an unfinished city, Manning said. There's no push for decorative memorialization in antebellum Washington because it's still such a place that doesn't even have all the functional buildings it needs yet. Trump has offered similar historical rationale for the $400 million ballroom he demolished the White House East Wing to begin building, arguing that officials for 150 years have wanted a large event space. That claim, too, is dubious. While space at the White House has indeed long been an issue, there's no record of public outcry for a ballroom. The arch would stand near the Arlington Memorial Bridge, which spans the Potomac River. Trump's first unveiled the idea at an October dinner for top donors to his ballroom. Without divulging how much the arch would cost, who would pay for it, or whether he'd seek approval from planning officials, the president showed off 3 different sized arch models, all featuring a statue of Lady Liberty on top. The president acknowledged at the time that the largest was his favorite, and the Washington Post reported that Trump is mulling building an arch standing 250 feet tall. Asked about that aboard Air Force One, Trump didn't confirm the exact height he desires, but offered, "I'd like it to be the biggest one of all." We're setting up a committee, and the committee is going to be going over it, Trump said. It will be substantial. The president says he'd like the new structure to be reminiscent of the Arc de Triomphe at the end of the Champs-Élysées in Paris, which was built to honor those who fought for France during the French Revolution and Napoleonic Wars. but the monument stands only 164 feet high. A 250-foot Washington Arch would dwarf the Lincoln Memorial and White House and even rival the Capitol, which stands 288 feet. The finished arch would be part of a building boom Trump has personally triggered. In addition to the ballroom, Trump is closing the Kennedy Center for 2 years of renovations amid backlash from artists over changes he made at the nation's premier performing arts venue. He replaced the lawn in the Rose Garden with a patio area reminiscent of his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida, and redecorated the Lincoln bathroom and palm room in the White House. Trump also installed a Walk of Fame featuring portraits of past presidents along the colonnade, massive flagpoles on the north and south lawns, and golden flourishes, cherubs, and other flashy items in the substantially overhauled Oval Office. The arch would extend the president's influence into Washington, where he has talked of beautifying tired grassy areas, broken signage, and street medians. He also deployed the National Guard to help break up homeless encampments. Harrison Design, a local firm, is working on the project, though no construction start date has been announced. Trump wants to unveil the new structure as part of celebrations marking America's 250th birthday. Pressed on what Trump meant by the four eagles, the White House sent a photo showing eagle sculptures at the four corners of the Arlington Memorial Bridge, but no further details. President Trump is right. The American people for nearly 200 years have wanted an arch in our nation's capital to showcase our great history, White House spokesperson Davis Ingalls said in a statement. President Trump's bold vision will be imprinted upon the fabric of America and be felt by generations to come. His successes will continue to give the greatest nation on earth, America, the glory it deserves. The president's timing is off, though. The Arlington Memorial Bridge was first proposed in 1886, but it wasn't approved by Congress until 1925. According to the National Park Service, the bridge was conceived after the World War, and meant to memorialize the symbolic reunification of the North and South. It was originally built to link the site of the Lincoln Memorial with the home of Confederate General Robert E. Lee, where Arlington National Cemetery now stands. And now for an article about the Super Bowl. Seahawks defense dominates May. Patriots quarterback turns ball over three times as offense sputters. Santa Clara, California. Drake May was a dependable and steadying force for the New England Patriots this season. The second-year quarterback never got the chance to be that when his team needed him the most in the Super Bowl. May was the NFL's most accurate passer during the regular season and finished second in MVP voting, but he was hounded by the Seahawks' dark side defense throughout. He threw two touchdown passes, but was sacked six times, had two interceptions, and lost a fumble that led to a touchdown by Seattle in New England's 29-13 loss on Sunday. May finished 27 of 43 for 295 yards, and there were few highlights before he and the Patriots finally found some traction in the third quarter. Left tackle Will Campbell gave up two of the sacks on May as the Seahawks sent several blitzes to his side of the line. Trailing 19-0 after his fumble set up a touchdown pass by Sam Darnold, May finally got some time to operate in the pocket and threw a 35-yard touchdown pass to Mac Hollins. It brought some life to the Patriots' sideline, but it was short-lived. May's pass intended for Kyle Williams was picked off by Julian Love. The Seahawks added Jason Myers' fifth field goal on their ensuing drive. Down 22-7, New England's fate was basically sealed when May was picked off by Uchenna Nwosu, who returned it 45 yards for a score. The Patriots, who came in averaging 18 points per game in the playoff, was held to 331 total yards. New England was denied a seventh Lombardi Trophy, which would have broken the tie with the Pittsburgh Steelers for the most in NFL history. It was a thudding end to a Cinderella-like season for the Patriots, who finished the regular season 14-3 in Coach Mike Vrabel's first season, which came off back-to-back 4-13 finishes. The Patriots fell into a 12-0 halftime hole and punted on 8 of their first 9 drives. It would have been 7 straight, but the final one of the first half was a one-play kneel down. The 51 total yards gained by the Patriots were the fewest in the first half hour in the last 35 Super Bowls. It also marked the 5th Super Bowl without a touchdown in the first half. May also became first player to be sacked 3 times on the first 4 drives of a Super Bowl since Tom Brady in Super Bowl 42 against the New York Giants. One of the reasons Seattle's defense was so effective was it did a great job of keeping New England's offense in long yardage situations on third down. The Patriots had to negotiate third downs of 9, 15, 7, 17, and 12 yards in the first half. They were the only 2 of 7 on conversions in the first half. Digest. Apartment building collapses in Lebanon, Beirut. At least 9 people were killed and 6 rescued from the rubble of a multi-story apartment building that collapsed Sunday in the city of Tripoli in northern Lebanon, state media reported. Rescue teams continued to dig through the rubble in search of 8 more people believed to be missing, the state-run national news agency reported. The bodies pulled out included a child and a woman. Dozens of people crowded around the site of the crater left by the collapsed building, with some shooting in the air. Building collapses are not uncommon in Tripoli due to poor building standards. Lebanon's health ministry announced that those injured in the collapse would receive treatment at the state's expense. Culture minister quits, had Epstein connection, Paris. France's former culture minister Jack Lang resigned after Saturday as head of a Paris cultural center over alleged past financial links and convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein that prompted a tax investigation. He is the highest profile figure in France impacted by the release of Epstein files on January 30 by the U.S. Department of Justice. He is known for his role as a cultural minister under Socialist President François Mitterrand in the 1980s and 1990s. Lang, 86, was summoned to appear at the French Foreign Ministry, which oversees the Arab World Institute, on Sunday, but he submitted his resignation. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Decatur Herald in Review. Please stay tuned.